Welcome back to another episode of the Gene Smith Podcast, presented by Encova Insurance, where we sit down to speak with the Ohio State Senior Vice President and Wolf Foundation Endowed Athletics Director to talk about the current state of OSU athletics. My name is Ben Waite, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Gene Smith. Gene, before we hop into things, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Ben. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. This is our final recording
of
the Gene Smith Podcast.
This is it.
So we're sitting in your office here with some empty frames and boxes all ready to be shipped out. But I appreciate you taking the time to sit down once again. And before we dive into some topics to discuss today, wanted to maybe recap some of the end of season competitions and championships for our teams and tell the listeners what we had going on.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, we're just coming off an unbelievable opportunity with our men's golf team, watching them out in La Costa and Carlsbad, California. And it was great to have it on the Golf Channel and be able to watch it. But for our golf team to make the Final Four and to make the top eight and didn't make the Final Four is just phenomenal. Really proud of those young men and our men's tennis team. Made it to the semis in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and then ultimately our doubles team of Robert Cash and J.J. Tracy won the national championship, so really proud of them. And but we're winding down. We have a number of athletes competing in the NCAA track championships, and so that's coming up. And then our rowing team competes in the national championship as well. So they're poised, and it's just a – just a really, really great ending to the year, and I'm really proud of our kids.
Absolutely. A lot of fantastic endings to seasons and some more to come. As we prepare to enter June here, as I mentioned, we're sitting in your office, and you're beginning to get in to pack things up. So what have you been up to lately, I guess?
Yeah, it's just really planning. You know, we had our Big Ten meetings out in California, and just came off of those last week, and Ross went home to his family and is going to move up here this coming weekend. And he left from our Big Ten meetings. And so I've just been planning for June and making sure that we have everything in place for Ross to make a good transition. And of course, I'm packing, trying to purge and move some things away. But I'm going to spend a lot of time with our donors and in our community and some staff. June is kind of that transition month. Mm-hmm. I have to go to NACTA. NACTA is June 8th through the 13th out in Las Vegas. But I have to spend some time out there with my colleagues, and that's really about it.
For our final episode today, Gene, I wanted to go back and start at your beginning of your time here at OSU.
Oh boy, and so, St. John Arena.
I remember the hardwood walls.
Oh man.
As glorious as those offices were, I'm glad we moved over here. But what are your earliest memories of coming to Ohio State, and what do you remember about the first couple of months when you were on campus here?
It was just a lot. You know, Ohio State's a big campus, and it's a lot of people, and it's basically a city. So I spent a lot of time getting to meet people, listening to people, learning about the culture and all the different traditions, and questioning a lot of different people. You know, when you make a transition as a leader, it's really the best time to be curious, and as I told Ross, to be kind of stupid, you know, because you can ask stupid questions. And so, I spent a great deal of time just learning why things were the way they were, and then over time just began to shift. But I just remember so many good people. I already had a relationship with John Hicks, who, God bless him, he passed away, but he was kind of a confidant to me. Then I, you know, had a John Wolf who was phenomenal to me, and met a number of different people in the community who were very influential in the community. Mayor Michael Coleman, and just a number of different people who gave me some good guidance.
Who who internally did you lean on in those early days? Who helped acclimate you to the culture here at Ohio State?
You know, it's funny. There was not one single person, Ben, that I leaned on because I really didn't know a lot of people except for some of the alums like John Hicks and Archie and others. And so I really did my best to just be my own person and ask good questions. I did fortunately have two trustees that I gravitated to. Alex Shoemate became a good personal friend. Bobby Schottenstein became a great personal friend. And they, over the years, have been great confidants. So, but internally, there was really no one that I really leaned on heavily. I just did everything I could to learn about everybody, because the people and the behavior of the people define the culture. So I wanted to really just meet as many people as possible.
So in a recent interview you did with Doug LaMaurice, you mentioned that you weren't all that interested in interviewing for the Ohio State position
at first.
It took a little bit of heckling and some guidance from Sheila to get you to come on campus. But what point during the interview process did you realize that Ohio State was a place that you wanted to be?
You know, I struck up a really good relationship with Joe Aluto, who was the dean of the College of Business at that particular time. He was chair of the search committee. And I, you know, I have my degree in business from Notre Dame, and so I've always had this kind of affinity for business schools. And he was impressive, and the number of people on the committee were impressive, and so I really liked the questions that came from the committee. You know, I watched the way he orchestrated things. I liked his leadership style. But I was comfortable. I was honest because I really didn't care a whole lot. And I was honest with them about my wife, Sheila, who had a great job at Arizona State. And I remember walking out saying, okay, I guess I blew that interview because I just told them the truth. But it was just a comfortable environment, very relaxing. Had great conversations with Karen Holbrook on the phone a number of times, but in the interview process itself, it was just a comfort level with everyone who was part of the process, and they had, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 people.
Coming to Ohio State, you had already had stints at the time, was it Pac-10 school?
It was Pac-10.
And then Big 8 before that?
Yeah, it was Big 8, then it transitioned to the Big 12. Mm-hmm. So I had the Mid-American Conference, obviously, and had the Pac-10. I had great relationships with a lot of different people from those conferences. I was on the committee that moved the Big 8 to the Big 12 when I was at Iowa State. So I kind of saw how that process is navigated. And I was on the NCAA television negotiating committee for the first rights of the television deal for basketball. So I just learned a lot at different places over time.
And even coming from, you know, at the time, two Power Five conference institutions, coming to Ohio State, the scope and scale is much larger.
Yeah.
Is there a sport that you knew nothing about in 2005 here at Ohio State that you grew to be a huge fan of?
No, synchronized swimming. You know, I fell in love with it. You know, obviously they had performed at the highest level, won multiple national championships. But, you know, it was really the young ladies in the program that I gravitated to, their great personalities, their backgrounds, and where they're from. Many of them, where they ultimately went. You know, Sheila, my wife, was head basketball coach at UNLV for a number of years, and we have relatives in Vegas, so we would go to Vegas on occasion. And I remember going to the O Show, and I think we had four or five former synchronized swimmers competing in the O Show, performing in the O Show. And so synchronized swimming was one that I really gravitated to off of the bat. And there were others that were intriguing, but synchronized swimming was probably the one at the top of the pyramid.
It's hard not to. Physically, I don't understand how they can do that.
Yeah.
There's nothing about that. It is one of the most physically daunting competitive sports I've ever seen.
Yeah, I used to have arguments with others about who has the strongest core in all of our sports, and I put synchronized swimming right up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have to hold your breath underwater that long and stay steady in order to create the synchronized pyramid underneath the water, man, that's some juice right there now.
I'm sure that the sports performance team can put some sort of test to get that.
I'm sure, get to the bottom of that.
Going back briefly to your pre-Ohio State days, you mentioned a little bit of your time in the MAC. You were the interim AD for a year at Eastern Michigan before you were named the athletic director. What do you remember about that year?
The interim year? there were a number of different things. Well, first of all, they moved me out of the athletic department over to the administration building to get me away from the environment because the culture needed to change. It was like 300 and something days I was interim, and I applied for the job, and I wasn't a finalist. There were six finalists, and they made a mistake of asking me to tour the finalists when they came on campus, so I figured this was my great time to sabotage them.
Right.
Well, that's not true. I really didn't. But the memory was actually getting the permanent job, and I never forget it. They interviewed six people. And I thought at some point in time there would be an announcement, and I got a call from Roy Wilbanks, who was the vice president at that time, and asked me to meet him at the Huron Inn for a beer, and he offered me the job right there. And, you know, I hadn't gone through like a formal interview process, and the university had just come to a conclusion that after interviewing these six, you know, there was nobody better than me. And so, you know, I always took the high ground with the touring process that they asked me to do and all that. So never showed any negativity when I wasn't in the final six. So that part of it, I remember, you know, real vividly being in the Huron Inn and getting a job offer and had one beer.
A celebratory beer.
Beer. One beer.
When you then moved on to Iowa State, you helped lead a charge to name the football stadium after Jack Trice, who was Iowa State's first black athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to us a little bit about that process, why that was important, and what you remember about going through the renaming for the stadium?
Yeah, you know, that was one of those leadership moments where, you know, you had to truly lead from behind. For years, there was a student organization, a student effort to name the stadium after Jack Trice, long before I even got there, long before the president at that time, Martin Jiske, had gotten there. He was awesome. But there was resistance. So I spent a great amount of time talking to movers and shakers and people of influence and people who actually had a say, and trying to convince them that it was the right thing to do. I was never up front. I just felt like, as the athletic director, and obviously being black, I felt like it would be self-serving to some degree. And I felt the best way to do that was to sit with people one-on-one or in small groups and try and convince them. And the president and some faculty were moving in that direction anyway, but they needed support. And they needed support from influential people in the community and the state of Iowa. And so I felt like it was my job to have those conversations. And, you know, when you read Jack Trice's story and how he passed away and that letter that he wrote, you know, it's really symbolic of really what sports is all about and, you know, the people of Iowa. I thought I was going to be there 2, 3, 4 years max. And I was there for 7 years, and I have some of my fondest memories of being in Ames, Iowa. And the people there care about values, work ethic, you know, those type of things. And so, Jack Trice represented that. And so it was important for me to do my best to try and make sure that that happened. And fortunately, all the conversations that I had were positive. There's some tough questions. You know, there were some people who wanted to put a corporate name on the stadium, and that was always a challenging conversation. But I think it was the right thing to do.
Then moving to Arizona State, that university is located in a place that I think is most commonly associated with people who are going into retirement.
That's right.
Moving to the area.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, can you talk a little bit about leading an organization in an area that is so heavily transient, where there's not a natural rally around an institution like there is maybe at Ohio State?
Yeah, that was, as an athletic director, that was the toughest job. You know, one, because of what you said, like 70-something percent of the people in the Valley were not from the Valley. And that was really challenging. They didn't have an affinity for Arizona State. And Arizona State wasn't a consistent winner in football, in particular, in basketball either. And so Olympic sports were very well done, but the football struggled. Frank Cush had a great run, and Bruce Schneider in his early years had a great run. But it was really hard to recruit people to Arizona State because of the heat. And we didn't have an indoor facility, and that made it really tough, particularly in August and September and early October. Really I had to flip the philanthropic approach. And my wife was the best at it. She worked directly for President Crow, and she was in charge of their major gifts and $5 million donors and above. And we had to flip it to investments. It was an investment in Arizona State. It was an investment in the community. It was an investment in Tempe. It was an investment in Phoenix and Central Arizona. So you had to change the conversation. It was an investment in the quality of life in the environment. That's still true when you talk about philanthropy at any place, but you just had to change how you try to convince people to be a part of what your vision that you had for the place. And so, because many of those people were donors at other places, Kansas or New York or wherever. I mean, it was unbelievable. Iowa, there were so many people from everywhere, but they were very wealthy people. And so you had to spend a lot of time teaching them about Arizona State and its impact on Central Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Now then, transitioning from Arizona State to Ohio State, if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice in 2005, what would you say to yourself?
I don't know. 2005, I felt comfortable in my transition. I really did. I had said subscribe to a leadership book by Michael Watkins, The First 90 Days, and I just believed that it's a book about transition leadership and how you're supposed to just be curious and ask a lot of questions and don't make a lot of decisions. And I was, I was just curious. I learned a lot, and I took my time. We did our reorg a year later. We didn't have a performance management plan in the department. There were no quantifiable goals and objectives for employees. So I felt like my early years, I listened, I learned, I did it the right way to try and establish, goals and objectives and a vision for the future. I felt like that was a pretty good job on my part. Now, there were some bumps along the way, but in those early years, I think I did okay.
Based on the results, I would say so.
Yeah.
No notes. So now I'd like to reflect back on maybe some of your favorite experiences mm-hmm. here at Ohio State. So I'm going to give you an example of a an event or a game or competition, and yeah. I just want you to reflect on what you remember about
sure,
that.
Sure.
Wanted to start. We'll go chronologically here. So, what about the Final Four trips in 2006 and 2012?
Oh my God, you won't believe this. That first one, I actually just sent. I think it was two nights ago, a picture to Brett Scarborough, Martin Jarman, and Pat Chung. We were sitting in the hotel with all the tickets in a hotel room with all the tickets on the floor, and we had a graphic on a chart that was where people were sitting. It was so, it was unbelievable, and we had envelopes, and Sarah Preck was on the other side of the room, and It was that night sorting through tickets and for hours and deep into the night is what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game was phenomenal, but the you know the players were phenomenal and watching Thad coach. But I gotta tell you, that night doing the tickets is a memory.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable, and you know we had great players. Those games, those contests were a great contest, and the fans had great experience. But it was more for me. It was more around the operations and making sure that we serviced everybody the right way. So those are my memories.
That memory of sorting tickets, would that have been in New Orleans for the,
yes.
the Final Four? I'm sincerely yes. hoping any photographs of me from that trip have been permanently deleted.
See, I don't know. I got to go back through there. These pictures just pop up every mm-hmm. now and then? I was mm-hmm. like, one popped up. There was some wild turkey. Mm-hmm. And so that popped up, and I'm like, oh, let me mm-hmm. send this to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Occasionally at a staff gathering, Erica Hoon or Kate Newshirt will come up, and they'll have photographs from that trip that – I'm hoping they deleted. Next, can you talk about Evan Turner in his time here, and then what you remember about the buzzer beater in the Big Ten tournament?
I could see that shot so many different times, and that's the long baggy shorts. I mean, I could see him running up to the side of the court and taking that shot, and it was just he was such a great player. And watching him transition to a point where he had to handle the ball at the point. You know, he was kind of a natural two or three, but Thad over time had to have him handle the ball, bringing it up to court so many different times. And watching him become a great handler of the rock was just a beautiful transition. He was obviously athletic, could jump out the gym and all those things that had a touch with the ball. But controlling the game from the point was something that I remember about him and that transition for him. He did a great job. He didn't resist it. He embraced it, and we were very successful because of it. He was a great player and a funny person. He's just a hilarious person. He really is. So I every time I see him, I start laughing because he's just a good human being.
What about the wrestling national championship run?
Oh my goodness, that's one of my favorite memories. You know, we were our women were in North Carolina playing, and Sheila and I had to jump on a flight real fast to get to St. Louis, and I remember run into the facility to make sure we didn't miss a match, and we could run at those times. But you know, those wrestling is such a different sport, and it is truly the man in the arena. You know, it's mano a mano. That's it. And you know, you got your techniques, you got all your holds, you got moves, but the end of the day, it's about effort and grind, and so we had some unbelievable wrestlers. You know, Miles Martin was a puppy. You know, Kyle Snyder, Nate Tomasello. I mean, it was just Logan Stiebler. Those guys were beasts. And so to be able to be there, sit courtside, and watch them win, it was just an emotional moment. You know, Tom had done such a great job of recruiting good character, great talent. So that was kind of a capstone of great work and effort to bring some talent here. And so that was a fun experience.
What about the 3-game run for the football national championship?
Oh my God!
Starting in Lucas Oil.
Well, it's hard to look at just that 3-game run without thinking about, you know, the quarterback situation and how it evolved with Braxton, you know, and JT getting hurt in the team up north game. And I remember leaving my suite to go to the training room by the visiting team locker room, and I missed, you know, Cardell coming in because I was in there with JT, and we were able to, you know, after he got settled, we were able to wheel him out and bring him out so he could see the last part of the game, and I could see it along with him. And it was, you know, that was unbelievable. Cardell getting in that game and performing like you hoped he would. But then I obviously knew, because I went to practice, you know, what Urban was up to for the Wisconsin game. So I, you know, you see the game plan, you know, you realize that, okay, we can beat them deep, you know, we can get behind them. And Devin was just a freak of an athlete. You know, people don't know he was a high jump champion, and so if he got behind you and the ball was up there, he was going to go get it. And so it was just a beautiful thing to watch. And then we had so much talent across the board. You know, we could go crazy talking about that talent. But then, you know, that was a big game, you know, 59-0. But going and beating Alabama, you know, was the capstone. And the way we beat them, you know, pre-half with Evan Spencer on the reverse pass. I mean, holy smoke, who would have, you know, it couldn't have been, with Michael Thomas, it couldn't have been scripted any more perfectly, and probably 2 or 3 inches on the sideline, and you know, he would have been out of bounds. And Evan threw it in the only place that he could get it. I mean, on a reverse pass. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the offensive line was a beast, and, you know, Zeke ran hard. So it was just in the defense. Man, my God, they ate him up. So that was such a great contest. And I felt confident going into Oregon. I really did. You know, I was excited about going to AT&T Stadium. And I was on the basketball committee when they were building AT&T Stadium, and I was on the site selection committee. So I was there, and you know, halfway through its construction, the scoreboard wasn't even up, and you know, Jerry Jones was giving us the pitch about, you know, having the Final Four there and all that, and I knew that place was phenomenal, and I knew Buckeyes would love it, and they did. And but the game, you know, I felt confident we could beat Oregon. I really did. I felt the game that we needed to overcome was Alabama. And that game sticks out in my mind probably more than the other two.
I still can't get over the fact that on that 3-game run, not only did we beat 3, you know, highly successful and accomplished teams, but we also beat all 3 Heisman finalists.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. How about that? I didn't even think about
just
that.
Just a wild little excerpt to add on to a crazy story.
I know. It was crazy. Yeah. No, it was crazy.
During your time here, Gene, we've had thousands of exemplary student athletes come through Ohio State. Mm-hmm. When you think about some that stood out for their impact outside of the competition, we've talked a lot about high level competitions and really exciting moments, but when you think about some that really stood out to you for what they did off the field or off the court or out of the pool, who comes to mind?
You know, it's so funny. There's so many of them. It's really hard. You know, James Laurinaitis. You know, I was just talking with him yesterday, and you know, watching him, you know, go on the field the way he did, and perform the way he did, and you know, as one of the greatest linebackers ever here, and then seeing him in the NFL, and then spending some time with him, you know, he was at our house for dinner with my wife and Brian Hartline and Malcolm Jenkins and, you know, their spouses, and it was you know, I think I was connected with him, you know, right away, and you know, he's having his fourth child now, and it's gonna be a boy, and he's all excited, and, you know, so it's I really, you know, the person is just phenomenal, and he and I, you know, struck up a good relationship, and there's others. I mean, I, you know, over time, there's so many. I would struggle to pick out any. You know, Maddie McIntyre, mm-hmm. and who was in our development team here, is a part of, you know, the initial part of the Leadership Institute, and now she's out there, you know, doing her thing, and as an investor, you know, capitalist, so to speak. But there's just so many, you know. Heidi Lou, the synchronized swimmer, I just got an email from her, and I think she was 4-time champion. And I don't know, there's Emma Baranski's out in Vegas and got her MBA, and now she has what do they call that truck, where she sells plants and stuff, whatever you call it. But there's just a lot of them. I mean, out again. And then what's beautiful is a lot of them are here in Columbus. Mm-hmm. That's the unique thing about Buckeyes in Ohio State. A lot of them come back here. Christina Manning and track. Oh my God, there's just so many of them. So it's hard. As I sit here and think about it, names just jump in my head. Adelaine or Robert Cash now in tennis. Mm-hmm. Just emailed me the other day about getting into med school. So I don't know. I'd go crazy. I mean, you and I would be here for hours if I really started down that path.
Yeah.
But because there's so many in so many different sports, and you know, yeah, it's just a lot.
Yeah, yeah. If I may now, I'd like to talk about some things that have changed over the last 19 years.
Yeah.
Our support for our student athletes is much more comprehensive now than it was in 2005. When did you begin to realize that there were opportunities to improve on that approach?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many different things over the years, because you know, I call it the ecosystem we serve, and you know, you watch it in the middle school and high school system and how they change, and you listen to your coaches about their experiences on the recruiting trail, and so, you know, you learn and you pay attention to how the student and the student athlete is changing, and so you have to change with it. You know, I never thought that we would have, you know, a little over 5 sports psychologists in the athletic department. And I think it was 2009 or somewhere in there we first started. And but you listen to your coaches and you read them. You know, I'm a big reader of the Wall Street Journal and New York Times, and so you pay attention to some of those things, and you realize you got to provide those services. Some of those things were, you know, just basic, you know, the academic support. You know, I never forget, we were on a quarter system, and Stan Jefferson was our player personnel director for football, and I was like, you know, Stan, we got to do a better job with our guys around math. You know, we're bringing in guys that are struggling with math, and you know, he came up with the idea to have a math camp, and since we're on quarters, you know, every morning, Monday through Thursday, we had math camp, and for those guys who had deficiencies, and based upon their transcript or feedback we got from the high school systems. But so you listen and you learn and you react and you respond, and so all the things that we put in place was based upon, you know, getting feedback from our coaches, my colleagues, you know, reading about things, going to conventions, Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma and I believe were the first two that created a social media community manager. I remember coming back and pulling Diana Sabo aside, and you know Diana. Mm-hmm. And I said, Diana, we got to get our arms around this social media world that's emerging. I need you to figure out how to become our person around social media. And as you well know, Diana is one that's gonna like embrace it and mm-hmm. just go like crazy, mm-hmm. and she did. And so we emerged as one of the best in the country, and teaching us, we brought in so many different people with our student athletes, trying to teach them about the value of social media, how it can affect you. We brought in human resources directors, teaching them that, hey, human resources directors will look at your social media to determine your character as part of the interview process. So, I mean, it was just so many different things that I learned over the years from other people that we needed to respond to and put services in place. And
in that same vein, you've overseen a seismic transformation in the landscape of our department, the physical footprint, during your time as athletic director. What comes to mind when you think about where our department was physically in 2005 compared to what the athletics district and our other facilities are now?
Yeah, Ben, it was, we had hired a firm to do a study around a master plan for athletics, and Andy had done such a great job with the stadium and the shot and baseball and the track, and so we're in actually the aquatic center, but we were kind of not where we wanted to be with some of the other sports. And so we had a firm. Then Gordon Gee came in after Karen Holbrook, and he hired a firm, I think it was Sasaki out of New York. And so we terminated the contract with our firm and then rolled into the university master plan process. And through that process is where the university's framework plan emerged. And so you had the arts district, you had the academic core, you had the West Campus research area, and you had the athletic district. And at that particular time, Sasaki and the university leadership felt that the land where St. John is, the ice rink, ROTC, and Friends Fieldhouse would be better served for academic growth. And we studied St. John. St. John was, we would have spent somewhere around $30-something million to bring St. John up to spec, and we weren't sure about what was underground. So anyway, we came up with the athletic district plan, and one of the first moves was to get our administrative staff into one building, because we were in five different places, but we needed to move them. And remember Don Paco brought me over to the Fawcett Center, which was swing space, old hotel. My wife actually worked in this building. She had an office with a shower and a bathtub and toilet. So it was a hotel room. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we renovated and brought all our people together, and the Shoemaker was the first building. The whole premise around those two buildings was to bring all your intellectual capacity together, create a sense of community with everybody working together. You have your formal meetings where you bring people together, but I call it, you have the water cooler conversation that's more important sometimes than the formal meetings. And so that was the main thing. The most important thing was what we did with the Fawcett, and then what we did with the Shoemaker Complex for our student athletes and for our sports performance team, because we brought all of our strength coaches, all of our trainers, everybody under one roof, and it's connected to the Woody Hayes. So you have 330,000 square feet where everybody's together, your equipment people, everybody's together. And so you have a few satellites here and there, but pretty much your core intellectual capacity is there. And so that was the whole vision, was to drive towards that. And And then, obviously, you know, the other facilities along the way. But the main thing was to bring people together. And that's the Fawcett Center and the Shoemaker were key to that.
We love a good water cooler conversation.
Oh, yeah.
On our floor. So I appreciate that sentiment.
Yeah, that's a lot of cookies on your floor,
there
too.
Are,
I
yes,
noticed that.
Yes,
you know, throughout the whole building, there's sweets on almost every floor.
But the good news is you have to walk the stairs from floor to floor, so you're kind of burning it off as you go. Yeah. There's zero calories.
Yeah. One of the things that I tend to forget about is our video crew, because they were, you know, in a basement, basically, in the shot. Most people don't know that. And I remember when I first came here and toured the Jack Nicklaus Museum, there was about 8,000 square feet up there of storage. And I'm like, it had this beautiful window overlooking the old Itangi Road and that. And I'm like, this would make a good office for me.
Nice and secluded.
Yeah. It would be great.
Yep.
But eventually, over time, we put them up in there, and I think it changed their ability to be together and have a better quality of their work environment. So it wasn't it was some of these entities that we have in the athletic department just needed better working space, and that was I tend to forget about that operation that they got up there. You don't know what they got until you go up there.
Yeah.
They got all the toys up
there.
They
prefer it that way. Well, yeah, sneaky. You mentioned Joe Castiglione from Oklahoma. Who have been some of your most trusted colleagues in this profession? Who do you go to for advice as a sounding board to talk through things?
Yeah, you know, early in my career, it was Cedric Dempsey, used to be the athletic director at Arizona, and became the NCAA president. And DeLoss Dodds was the athletic director at Texas for, I think, 32 or 33 years, and was at Kansas State before that. They were kind of my mentors, along with a gentleman by the name of Mike Cleary, who oversaw NACTA. Early in my career, those three, really, helped me along the way in an environment where sometimes I wasn't wanted just because of the color of my skin. They embraced me and helped me along the way. And I remember when I was at Eastern Michigan talking to DeLoss Dodds one time. I had interviewed six or seven different places, and I knew, that I was a token interview and candidate and many of them, and I talked to DeLoss about coming to work for him and just being an associate athletic director for him. And, you know, he kind of beat me up over the phone and told me to stay the course. And but there, those were my three. And then over time, Joe Castiglione and I are really good friends. Dan Guerrero, who just retired from UCLA, was a great confidant. We served on almost every single committee together. We were, almost talking all the time about what time you're going to get there. And so really those two were Joe and Dan were kind of the two. And now it's all over the board, but those were kind of the two that I would call and say, what do you think about this? Joe was at Missouri, and we talk a lot. I was at Iowa State at the time, and so we overlapped a little bit. But then when he got to Oklahoma, it kind of became real for both of us because we were at the top of the pyramid and blessed to be were in our seats, but. We had a lot of conversations about a lot of different things, and we always found time at conventions to sit together and talk. And he was kind of my guy, along with Dan.
As you prepare to step out of this office and into retirement, what do you hope that your legacy is that you leave here at Ohio State?
I've thought about that since I've been asked that question. I never thought about it before, but I hope that, Buckeye Nation and others appreciate what we did for the student athlete. I you know, the contests and the wins and all those things, certainly that's how we're measured in a lot of different ways, and that's so important. But you know, the blessing that we have is we create these opportunities for young people to excel beyond their sport. And you know, hopefully Buckeye Nation is proud of the fact that we did that excellently. You know, Aaron Kraft's a doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you don't provide that platform just to play basketball. You help someone like him realize that you can realize your dreams. You can get married. You can have a family. You can become a doctor. And so, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that, you know, in 2005 in April, we had 324 scholar athletes. In this past year, we celebrated 811. Mm-hmm. I am really proud of that. And the fact that our program stayed with the academic performance of the institution. As the institution changed and its academic profile changed, you know, we weren't fighting it. We embraced it and said, okay, we got to recruit at the highest level academically. And I remember Lori Walker, our soccer coach, saying, you know, we can't beat Stanford. Can't beat Stanford in recruiting. Now we can, because the numbers are there. And so, you know, anyway, I'm really proud of the fact that we have a culture in among our student-athlete population that strives for wins, no question. But they also understand that they have this unbelievable talent, but they also understand that effort has to be exerted in every part of their life to be successful. And, you know, that culture just doesn't happen. It happens with good people. And so I hope that people recognize that that's, you know, something that I really drove hard for, is to create that culture. And then secondly, you know, the people in the athletic department and business advancement, the 600 plus employees, is, you know, hopefully they appreciate we create an environment that's value-based. You know, integrity, operate with integrity, respect, and all those type of things. And a place that people want to come to work. You know, we were fortunate after COVID. A lot of places struggled to bring people back to work. We didn't force it. But people came back to work because it's a great social environment. Mm-hmm. So, plus you got to work. You got to be here to make things happen. But at the end of the day, it's still, you know, a good social environment to be in. So anyway, those are the things I hope that people remember.
What about sitting in the chair? What about the job? What part of it did you find most challenging?
You know, 2011, you know, we're around the tattoo gate, mm-hmm. and the NCAA gate, because I love Jim Tressel and think he's just a great human being. And mistakes were made, and you know, I really wish that there could have been some other ways to do what we did, and a lot of people were involved in that decision making process, and so that I wish we could have handled a little bit differently. You know, the Zach Smith thing around Urban, we could have handled differently. You know, I wish we had done some things differently there. Those two, but probably, you know, the thing that people don't see or hear much about are those student athletes who struggle. You know, and I won't talk about those that much, but you know, we had a few suicide attempts, and you know, we've had some tough deals. And you know, when I first came here, actually, I remember, you know, going, we lost a synchronized swimmer, Jessica Beck. But the reality is that you know, some of those type of things, you wish you could have done something different or done something to prevent. And so I'll always hold to those experiences because they make you better.
What part of the job did you find to be most joyful?
Oh my God, just coming to work. You know, it's funny. I didn't have many days where I didn't want to go to work. You know, it was almost every single day. Now everybody's not, you know, you don't wake up every day and want to go to work. So, I turn my music on and, you know, sing and be happy by the time I get here. But 99% of the time, I wanted to be at work. And you know, my family suffered because of it, you know, which is why, I want to retire and spend time with them. They've sacrificed a lot because of my passion to work. So I love that. Every day, just coming to the office or swinging somewhere on the way to the office and, you know, walking around the stadium and texting Chris North at Levy and saying, get this thing cleaned up. We got a game tomorrow.
Yep.
But I don't know. I just love coming to work.
What are your immediate plans for retirement?
Yeah, so my last day is June 28th, and Sheila and I fly out the morning of the 29th, and we sold our place here, and we're moving to Arizona, and we have our four children, and Sheila's siblings, and their children. We have 22 people who are going to meet us in Colorado and for about 5 days, and we're just going to enjoy one another, and then go back to Arizona, and I'm on a few boards, and I'm gonna do one consulting thing, so I got to get my calendar right, figure out that part of it, and got to get my technology straight. I got a IT guy coming in this Thursday to help me get my future ready. So, mm-hmm. But my immediate plans is really just to move and get settled in our new environment. And I'm on the Fiesta Bowl board, and I'll be chair-elect. So I'm going to really immerse myself in the Fiesta Bowl and the Sports Foundation in Arizona. So that's the immediate plans. And then just be available for my children and the grandchildren and just hang out. Chill as best I can and golf like mad.
Work on that swing.
Oh, like mad.
Yep. Well, that does it for our final episode of the Gene Smith Podcast presented by Incova Insurance.
Thank you, Ben.
Gene, I want to thank you for the immense honor that it has been to help you put this together. So I really appreciate you for doing that. And we really appreciate everyone who has listened so far. If you'd like to go back and listen to previous episodes, you can do so at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. But for now, signing off with Gene.
Yes, thanks, Ben. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. For Gene Smith and everyone here at Ohio State Athletics, I'm Ben Waite. Be well, and go Bucks.
Go Bucks.